Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to Special Teams, a production of iHeartRadio. Greetings and welcome inside Special Teams with Jason Smith and Mike Harmon, our weekly podcast as we look back at special teams throughout the course of sports history and what they did in single seasons that made them stand out and become so memorable. This is the second offering we have considering this month of March as we celebrate the NCAA tournament. Last week, we took a look back at three of the great Cinderella teams of all time. Navy in 1986, Gonzaga of 1999, and 2008 Davidson. We had a lot on David Robinson. We had a lot on Steph Curry. Oh, back then, he was Stephen Curry.
Stephen, get it right.
This is our second, by popular demand, our second round of Cinderellas as we take a look back at three Cinderellas from the NCAA tournament history as they were able to achieve what nobody thought they could. We have a team from the 80s. We got a team from the aughts. And a team from the teens. Our first team we're looking back at now, the 1986-1987 Providence Friars. Why? This was a team led by second-year Providence head coach Rick Pitino, who relied on his star point guard Billy Donovan to get everything done for Providence as they finished fourth in the Big East, 25-9 overall, and made a huge Cinderella run through the NCAA tournament to the Final Four. Rick Pitino.
It invokes so many thoughts as you start going. You mentioned the Billy Donovan. So you've got coaching royalty in terms of your player and your coach. And obviously for Rick Pitino, a lot of twists and turns to the story for rights purposes. I can't start whistling any Billy Joel themes behind your words, so we'll just kind of leave that alone as we go through. But a highly decorated coach, respected for what he was able to do in between the white lines, and you know, the obviously controversies along the way, but this is the genesis of a long, illustrious career of a complicated guy in the coaching circles. And you don't normally coach as long as he did without having one or two hiccups along the way. But the origin story is always pretty entertaining.
So on Pitino's coaching staff this year, Stu Jackson and graduate assistant Jeff Van Gundy.
Look at that.
On the Providence coaching staff in 1986-1987.
Did Pitino make him shave his head a little bit?
I think just he had to shave his head.
My hair's really good.
Yeah, no.
You can't have the same.
I think Van Gundy was shaving his head since he was like 13. Or just, you know, letting it grow in certain places. Now, this Providence team had some pretty good players on it. Delray Brooks was really good. Marty Conlin turned into a good player. They had Abdul Shamsuddin, who was from my hometown. And it was a very big deal that he was playing, because not many guys got scholarships to big-time D1 schools at that time. And he was from my hometown, and he went and got it with Providence, and he's on this big, you know, Cinderella run to the Final Four, and I'm in high school going, oh my God, this guy, I watched him play a couple of years ago, and here he is going to the Final Four.
Did they go and make a little shrine to him or anything?
No, because we had other guys who played better after that. But this was the
first guy. Celebrate the first.
Well, he didn't go to my high school. He went to a rival high school.
No, but I'm just saying, in the area, I mean, there had to be
I told you how we celebrated. That's how we celebrated it. That was it.
That's it?
That was our celebration.
He was a guy.
That was it. He was a guy.
All right, he got an article in the newspaper. Good for him.
Look, Billy Donovan, especially, just for a minute or two on him. He was smart. He was clutch. He put up big numbers. This wasn't, hey, I'm going to run the team and I'm 6 points, six assists. No, this is Billy Donovan was the leading, was one of the leading scorers of Providence. When they needed a bucket, he was the guy they went to. It wasn't like, well, he said, no, he was the guy. Pitino trusted him with everything.
Averaged 20 a game, averaging 7 3-point shots per game. 7.1 assists. I mean, doing a little bit of everything. Shooting percentage a little lower than you'd like at about 44%, but helping to run the point and make things happen.
First round of the NCAA tournament, they draw UAB, also known as Alabama-Birmingham, as a 6 seed. Providence wins this game 90-68. They were never in any trouble. Okay, hey, Providence, a 6 seed. They move on to the second round. And this was a very big game that in NCAA history is one of the great early round games. They play Austin Peay in the second round, the 14 seed who had pulled a big upset to get to this point in the NCAA tournament. I remember all the signs of this game, the flies open, let's go Peay. Like any sign you can think of that involved urine, you know, Austin Peay, this was up at this game.
Surprised most of those weren't outlawed. Well, the way they do signage nowadays.
Yeah, but it's the 80s, man. Anything went
wild,
in the 80s.
Wild and crazy.
Anything went.
Everything else was banned on television, but if you wanted to bring a sign somewhere, have at it. We can show that because it wasn't our content.
Yeah, this is a huge game because it comes down to the wire, and Austin Peay clearly could be a 14 seed that goes to the Sweet 16. Down late, Bob Thomas is fouled and is able to go to the free throw line for Austin Peay. He misses a 1-1.
He was terrible at the line.
Right? Terrible at the line. Billy Donovan, it's a big shot to tie the game. Bob Thomas is fouled again. He goes to the free throw line for a 1-1. If he makes one, they're going to win because there's only a couple of seconds left. He misses again. So the game goes to overtime. And Thomas hit one of those free throws. Austin Peay likely wins this game.
Yeah, he goes 2 of 7 from the line overall. So that was the guy. Get him!
in overtime, Billy Donovan gets his pocket picked with about 50 seconds left. As Providence is up one, you're thinking, okay, Austin Peay can take the lead. But Donovan races down court, steals the ball back. Just an amazing play by Billy Donovan. And they wind up getting up 90-87, and they have the ball in the final 35 seconds, and you're thinking, okay, well, they're up 3. Austin Peay's going to foul. They couldn't foul. For some reason, they just couldn't or wouldn't foul in the backcourt. They couldn't catch anybody, and the final 30 seconds ticks off the clock. Donovan's dribbling out the clock for most of it, and it's, how could you not foul? I mean, you got to extend the game. You got to put in the free throw line, come down and shoot a 3. You got to do these things. And they couldn't, 30 seconds, they couldn't foul. You see teams sometimes, well, it took a while. All right, 8 seconds went off the clock. No, this was over 30 seconds. Austin Peay couldn't foul.
Just a curiosity, right? I mean, that's good ball movement, but at some point you just throw yourself at somebody to stop the clock. Now, reminder, Bob Thomas is not former Bears kicker Bob Thomas. And then,
do you want to talk about former Bears kickers?
Just for a second, because
sorry, Cody Parkey. What happened to Cody Parkey?
Oh, why do you hate me so?
Sorry, buddy.
No, this guy became an Illinois Supreme Court judge. I mean, so I just wanted to show
this Bob Thomas.
That, no, not that.
See, it'd be a good story.
The Bears kicker, Bob Thomas.
That's a better story because we're talking about the other Bob Thomas.
Yeah, no.
Missing free throws, and now, but here he is.
I don't know.
The Supreme Court judge.
Maybe that sent him down a bad path.
You don't know. Maybe he became a state Supreme Court justice.
Well, let's take a look.
We have senators and state senators, like the state senators that don't matter. You know, we have senators, like maybe he became a state. It was a state Supreme Court.
You never can tell.
Justice.
Thing with the guy in the place.
Yeah. Could have happened for him.
Could have been.
So the Providence Friars now move on to the Sweet 16, and Rick Pitino at this point is one of the darlings of the NCAA tournament. Youthful, full of energy. You always knew a Rick Pitino team because you could hear him shouting on the court, especially when his team was playing defense. Mm-hmm. In fact, later on in his career, because we're talking about when he went to the Knicks after this, there was a big stat that when the Knicks were playing defense in front of their own bench, they gave up like 6 points less per quarter than they did at the other end of the court because they could all hear Pitino yelling, switch, do this, do this, do this. And because they can hear him giving their instructions, they played better. And when they couldn't hear him because it's further down court, they didn't play as good defensively.
Is there a law on the NBA books about IFBs?
There is.
If you can put a little listening device.
I don't think you can. I don't think you can do that.
Could you bang a trash can or something?
If I bang a trash can, it means it's a jumper. If I don't bang it, it means he's going in for a layup.
Maybe Band-Aids with little buzzers underneath. I don't know. Communication with the coach.
So Pitino is getting a lot of ink at this point. They go into the Sweet 16, and they face the 2 seed in the Southeast region, Alabama, and this was never a contest. Providence goes 14 out of 20 on three-pointers. They move on to the Elite Eight, where they're facing the number one seed in the region, Georgetown. And this is Georgetown being legendary. This is, hey, we had Patrick Ewing, and now we're moving on to the next great invention of our Georgetown Hoya dynasty. And Providence, likely because they were familiar with Georgetown, not only did they give them a big game, they blew them out, 88-73. They pressured the Hoyas into a horrible shooting night, and Providence officially becomes the Cinderella of the NCAA tournament, even though they were a six seed. It's not that big a deal, but nobody expected Providence to make it to the Final Four, but they get to the Final Four after beating a team from the Big East, Georgetown. You know, coming off this game, Georgetown is going, man, anybody else, and we make it to the Final Four. But we get a team that knows us, and so our advantage over these teams is less, because when you play a team from your own conference, they can prepare. They know how to prepare for you. So that was a huge advantage for Georgetown as a higher seed they didn't have.
Yeah, a lot of tape on common opponents and tendencies, and obviously that's easier done now than it was 30 years ago. But, I mean, you look at just the opportunities that roll through for this Providence squad, and you know, familiarity usually gives us some really great games, and this one was a classic. Reggie Williams with a big effort, Charles Smith with a good effort as well, but just not enough.
The next weekend, Providence goes home. They face Big East foe Syracuse,
yeah.
And Syracuse, before I went to college there, takes care of Providence, ends their run. They move on to the championship game, the famous one against Indiana, won by Keith Smart. But Rick Pitino has done enough. He has taken Providence to the Final Four, and always one knowing an opportunity and seeing one when it's there. Rick Pitino gets the head coaching job with the New York Knicks. When this happened, Larry Brown really wanted this job. I mean, Larry Brown had to wait.
He wanted a lot of different jobs.
Well, he did. He wanted to have all the jobs at once. Larry Brown had to wait a decade or two to get this next job that he really wanted.
Well, they eventually gave it to him.
He was so upset that at one point he told people, you know, no one would know Pitino if Thomas had hit the one-on-one for Austin Peay. Like, he goes back to that. If that kid hits the one-on-one in Austin Peay, Rick Pitino doesn't go on this run, no one would know who he is, and I would be the head coach of the New York Knicks.
I like that. I mean, that's good revisionist history, and might have been true.
Yeah.
But, look, Larry Brown eventually got to coach, I think, everywhere he ever wanted to.
Yeah, he did.
Sure. And then some. You want to talk about well-traveled? In our other podcast, we've talked about guys either doing job hopping or team hopping, Shaquille O'Neal at the end of his career. Hey, how many jerseys can we hang up? Right. Before we get done, Larry Brown's certainly there. But for Rick Pitino, look, fortune and, you know, opportunity and a little bit of luck and strategy. Right. Thomas went 2 of 7 from the foul line. Clearly he was rattled. Clearly he was not a guy that was going to finish. And then they couldn't foul down the stretch. How about you talk about that, coach? Mm. The ability to work the ball and not get fouled again. But, I mean, just for Rick Pitino, you know, you take the opportunity. Knicks, you know, and you mentioned prowess defensively.
He goes to the Knicks. They win their first division title in 20 years. And I'm thinking, wow, the Knicks are good, because my whole life the Knicks stunk.
And they do again.
Because I just, they're back to that. But like my whole life, I didn't start following basketball till the mid-70s. I'm 7, 8, 9 years old. The Knicks were terrible. They were terrible then. They were terrible early 80s. Finally, Pitino shows up. They win the division. I'm like, oh my God, the Knicks are going to be good. He coaches another year. Then he says, you know what? I don't like the NBA anymore. I want to leave. And the Knicks let him out of his contract. He goes and coaches Kentucky, wins the NCAA championship later on over Syracuse.
Of course.
And the legend of Rick Pitino grows in college basketball. He went to the Celtics again and coached. Then he went back to Louisville, won the national championship there. But this was the beginning for Rick Pitino was, hey, he had the big run. 2 years at Providence, Final Four, not going to get any better. I take the opportunity when it's there. And this Providence team, and really had known as much for Billy Donovan as much as Rick Pitino because of what Donovan's going to be able to accomplish, winning back-to-back titles with the Gators, succeeding in the NBA. I mean, you go back and look at this game, you go back and look at some of these highlights of Billy Donovan, especially like I talked about the play against Austin Peay where he steals the ball and goes down the court, and when Austin Peay can't steal the ball from him. And you can tell while he's dribbling, yeah, this is a future coach. This is going to be a future head coach. It's like, you know, Rick Pitino was molding himself in Billy Donovan to take over and move on and do great things.
Well, and you look at what Donovan went on to do collegiately. I mean, he was a 71% guy. I mean, as a coach.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. Just absolute dominance at Florida after a couple of years at Marshall. And you roll through for Rick Pitino, long career. Every once in a while, there's still that, how do you come back? He's hanging out in Greece.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. Good luck, Rick Pitino. Yeah. Good luck.
you never know, man. The, you know, vacated title, things of that nature. But the accolades, it's a long laundry list. And, you know, we always play the, can you tell the story of a sport without a guy? You certainly cannot look at the last 30 years of college basketball without a bunch of nods to Rick Pitino and what he meant to it and going into Billy Donovan and everything else that transpired between here and there.
So there's the legendary 86-87 Providence team. How about some, where are they now?
All right. First, you got Delray Brooks. He coached with Pitino at Kentucky. He is at Clay High School. He's a special ed teacher since 2013. And they got David Snedeker, former Final Four, but Hollywood director, but he also does stuff working with insurance companies, trying to help with claims and helping physicians.
Oh, that's nice. I like
that. There's a pretty penny to be made in that process.
You get involved in the medical field, you're going to make money.
But he became a Renaissance man, right? Yes. Hollywood director, did a little bit of this, sure, all that, and eventually into insurances.
Wow. So there it is, 86-87 Providence. Coming up next, we take a look at the first mid-major to the Final Four since 1979, a legendary team we still talk about, and a guy who once confided in me, I don't know what I'm supposed to do on the red carpet when people come up and interview me.
Wow.
We got that coming up next right here. Special teams, Jason Smith and Mike Harmon.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We are now fast forwarding into the aughts for our next Cinderella team, one of the greats of all time.
Is that your favorite word to say?
Aughts?
You seem to, you get this regal status about you and you sit upright in your chair as opposed to your normal slouch position. The aughts.
You know why? Because I feel like the aughts were this vast, barren wasteland for both, you know, anything in entertainment and music. And I just feel like it's a forgettable decade. So it's like the aughts makes it at least sound important.
Okay, you're trying to add some air of import to it.
Because
it's kind of like when you feel the need to add Esquire or something at the back end of a signature. Please, I earned this degree.
Look,
and you're going to address me as such, even in my junk mail.
Whenever we talk about stuff in sports, we go back sometime between now and 2010, or we go back to the 90s or the 80s. When do we go to the aughts? Remember the aughts? No, we never do.
No, that's
telling you. Vast, barren wasteland, the aughts. However, one of the big shining stars of the aughts, the 2006 team, the George Mason Patriots, who made it all the way to the Final Four, the first mid-major team to get to a Final Four since 1979. What was so interesting about George Mason? They were a top 25 team during the course of the season. Mm-hmm. It's not like George Mason was, well, they went on a run, they won their tournament, and suddenly they go on this huge, unpredictable steamrolling through the tournament. No, they were a top 25 team, but they didn't win the CAA. The Colonial Athletic, which they led all year, they lost in the tournament. So they were leading, you know, look, there it's a 27-8 team overall. Look, they're going to the NCAA tournament. No, they lose, but they get invited as an at-large team. Cincinnati and Florida State were two teams that people went crazy for, saying, how do you snub these two teams for a mid-major?
Oh, this was a big deal, right? This was the where the term mid-major took on the pejorative term like no other time in its history. Now it's, you know, non-PC to call a mid-major. Do we just talk about the expanded college basketball universe?
And you know me, I wouldn't let any mid-majors in the NCAA tournament because they don't play the schedule over the course of the year that merits them inclusion with all of the, you know, quote, power five schools. So there's more than five power conferences in college basketball. But like, I can't say that George Mason, because they win the CAA, deserves to get in over a Florida State that plays an ACC schedule. They don't, because if you're talking about putting George Mason in the ACC, what would their record be? They'd be lucky if they got to 500 and probably be way under it. But then you have a Florida State team, let's just say, that wins 18 or 19 games. Well, clearly they're the better team. Look, mid-majors just don't earn it as much over the course of the season. It's like taking a team that, hey, they won their AAA, they won AAA, the International League, or the PCL, let's put them in the Major League Baseball playoffs. Well, no. Sure, they could win a game here or there because, you know, any given Sunday, but did they really prove that they should be playing with the bigger teams? No. So, you know me, I would never put a mid-major in the NCAA.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we celebrate the outliers when they do happen, but it does become an annual rite of how do you wring your hands when, as soon as those first projections of the field start coming out, as we usually about the start of conference play, right? That's when we start getting into, well, you know, through the first 10, 11 games, and we go through. And this is what makes everybody nervous, right? That you're going to have some team left out. And when you talk about your power conferences and the schedules and trying to do, it's an apples to oranges comparison. And that becomes the difficult part. Yes, there's some pageantry to it. Great for the one shining moment video montage at the end of the tourney. But most times it's succeed and proceed for the higher seed. So why not allow those teams from the better conferences maybe go a little deeper in the selection of those?
Jim Larrañaga, head coach, who I actually met on the red carpet of the ESPYs once, which I'll tell you a fun story about.
Okay, good.
Look, he is having, in the middle of great success, he came to George Mason in 1997. This was his dark side of the moon. They win their opening round NCAA tournament game, and they beat Michigan State. Michigan State was in the Final Four the year before, but this was an 11-6 game. They shot well from the field. They shot horribly from the free throw line, and they still won by 10. They had a huge rebound advantage over Michigan State, and they won without Tony Skin, who was their second leading scorer during the year, because he was suspended because he punched a Hofstra player in the groin during the CAA semis. And if there's one thing the NCAA doesn't like, it's a groin punch. I mean, I don't like him either, but the NCAA doesn't like him.
How do you only get a one-game suspension for a groin punch?
Maybe one punch, one game.
I don't know. It seems
multiple
to me,
punches, multiple
look,
games.
If you land to the groin, seems like that's a multiple, isn't it?
He's landed one to the groin.
If he lands one above the shoulders, a multiplier. If you get the groin shot, there should be a multiplier. I mean, anywhere in between, hey, you know, just a one game is fine.
Second game of the tournament. Now, all right, George Mason wins. They beat Michigan State. They were in the Final Four.
Raises some eyebrows.
Yeah, sure. Okay, that's great. Then they beat North Carolina, the defending national champions. They were getting drubbed 16-2 in this game. And you figure, okay, thank you for coming, George Mason. Thanks for being here. But they get a close game at halftime. And then Larrañaga sends them out early for warmups in the second half. And he said, you got to play this game like the other team doesn't have jerseys on. Like you don't know they're North Carolina. And they went on to win this game. And they didn't have a crazy celebration after it was over. No, just line up for handshakes, moving on, and that's what the big teams normally do. This is a mid-major team that lost their way a bit in the first half, made it close at halftime, came out and boat raced them in the second half, and suddenly, this is the team that's acting like they're the favorites.
Held North Carolina to 36% shooting in this game. 36%. And then on two-point shots, they were 13 of 34. That's the thing that you circle. And it's one thing to be a Houston Rockets type team and just shoot yourself out of a game because you're not hitting from three. But when you talk about being inside the arc and shooting such a low percentage over the course of a game, 38% inside the arc, that really is telling. And this North Carolina, even though they were the defending champion, you had Tyler Hansbrough. It was the big name player on this squad. It wasn't the same juggernaut, as it were, and George Mason moves on.
So George Mason moves on in the NCAA tournament, a surprise team in the Sweet 16, but still everyone is expecting George Mason to go home. Why? Because they don't really have a star player. They have five guys in double figures, And he's okay, it's going to end because they don't have the Ja Morant who can take us all the way through. But their next game's against Wichita State. All right, it's Wichita State, another mid-major. They win this game 63-55, and suddenly George Mason is in the Elite Eight. So now awaiting them in the Elite Eight, the number two team in the country, number one seed in the region, the UConn Huskies. All right, this is where really everything is ending for the UConn
Huskies. Oh, yeah, the expectation.
For George Mason.
The bracket set up nicely for George Mason through some heavyweights, perennial heavyweights, but catching them at the right time. But this one seemed like thanks for playing. Here's your consolation prize.
UConn had Rudy Gay, Marcus Williams. They had all kinds of talent on this team, but UConn needed a layup at the buzzer to force overtime, and then they missed a three to win the game. George Mason wins by two. All five George Mason starters in double figures again, all the solid players that they had on this team, and here they are in the Final Four, and now they've taken over. Well, now this tournament becomes completely about George Mason.
But the amazing thing about this particular game is you have an 86-84 victory, 3 points off the bench. 3 points off the bench. Norwood plays 19 minutes, 0 points. And then think about that. I mean, 86 points in a game with three off the bench. All right, we're just running five guys.
We're just going to rely on you. No, and the only guy that you really hooked into, it was all about the team, but Jai Lewis was the guy who had a big tournament. Look, and he led the team in scoring 13 points per game over the course of the season. It's not like he scored 20 a game. Look, you had a bunch of guys with between 13 and 11 points per game. Lewis was the guy that cut through in the tournament. But it was really the story about George Mason, who up until this point was just a character in 24, who actually wound up, they killed his character off, actually, George Mason.
Spoiler alert. Well, what if I wanted to go back and binge watch?
Xander Berkeley, who played George Mason, they killed his character off. Third season? Fourth season.
What if I was a big Xander Berkeley fan?
Are you really a Xander Berkeley fan?
If it's the guy I'm thinking of,
He wound up marrying the woman who played Nina from the first season of 24.
How about that?
Who you thought was on Jack's side and then wasn't, and then was, and then wasn't. So,
sorry. Yeah, I was right. That's the guy I like.
Boy, I'm really spoiling this for you.
It's okay.
Xander Berkeley was just in Walking Dead.
Yeah, that I definitely didn't see.
No, he was spineless in Walking Dead.
Wow.
But his name was George Mason.
I mean, literally spineless because the zombies took it?
No. He was going to let the bad people come in and do whatever they wanted to. Yeah, he was a bad leader. But that was George Mason up until this point. Now it's George Mason. They get to the Final Four, 4 days between games. They play Florida. Or really, you have 6 days between games. They play Florida, the eventual national champion, Florida Gators.
Balance Gators, man.
And the Gators, look, this was when the Gators were at their peak, when they were just rolling through and they put all kinds of guys in the NBA.
Well,
and
Joakim Noah played harder than anybody.
You had Corey
even at
Brewer,
the collegiate Joakim level.
Noah, he was full of heart, even back with Florida. I mean, this was Florida, they put so many guys in the NBA.
See, this is audio only, Jason just rolled his eyes, being the Knicks fan that he is, thinking of Joakim Noah. I had him, as my Chicago fandom with the Bulls and got the best out of him.
About the guy. Oh, Joakim Noah plays with heart.
He cared.
Yes, he plays with heart. But look, this Florida team, this is part of back-to-back national championships for them. Billy Donovan, they were superstars of college basketball. So Florida ends it for George Mason, but getting to the Final Four, they make their mark. Again, first mid-major team to get to the Final Four since 1979.
But they become one of the teams to put on the poster, as it were, of little teams that could, right? This is the justification of expanding the field and looking a little deeper and going into the mid-majors and allowing them in, even though time and again you see the early exits and it's the, all right, color by numbers kind of NCAA tournament. But here's one where they rose up, if only for a couple of weeks.
We still celebrated George Mason. I remember being at the ESPYs. This is back when I was hosting All Night on ESPN Radio. And part of my gig every year, the best part was getting to go and cover the red carpet arrivals at the ESPYs.
Except that it was 100 degrees.
Yes, that was
burning
up. Awful. It was so
hot. I did that a couple of times.
Oh, my God. It was so hot.
Yeah.
But Jim Larrañaga comes up, and, you know, I figured one of the first people walking through is Jim Larrañaga. Like, he's on the red carpet of the ESPYs. Like, the red carpet starts at 3:30, and all the stars, like, come on.
He's at 3:45.
No, he's at, like, 3:32. Like, the first guy coming on the red carpet, like, I don't know. Am I supposed to be here? I don't know. Fine.
So it's like going to a party. Some member of your family always wants to be there right when it starts.
Right. Or when you're not the cool guy going, hey, the party starts at 10. You show up at like 10:45 because there's a people that show up right at 10. Hey, can I come in? Yeah, come on in. I mean, that's kind of more what
I mean, you got to get the party started somehow.
So Larrañaga comes on and I interview him for a couple minutes and I say to him, okay, are you used to red carpets? He goes, no, this is the first one. He was a really great guy. And I said, who are you wearing? He said, what? I said, who are you wearing? You're on the red carpet. You gotta tell me who you're wearing. What design are you wearing? He goes, oh boy, I don't know. And he turns to his wife and she goes, I don't know. I'm like, all right, you know, no.
And meanwhile, knowing you, you're cackling like a madman.
So, yeah, it was funny. Yeah. We finished the interview and he leaves. And then, you know, he goes on to do the rest of the red carpet and I go on to do other interviews. And I'm noticing as I'm ending an interview, he's kind of waiting on the periphery and he catches my eye and I'm going, Jim Larrañaga wants to come back and talk to me.
He wants to have another interview. Hey, you know, we were talking about something.
He comes back to me, puts his arm on my shoulder, and he whispers in my ear, he goes, Hugo Boss. I looked on the inside and saw the thing. It's Hugo Boss. I'm
That's
like, oh,
awesome.
Okay. So he wanted me to know he's wearing Hugo Boss on the
That's
red
fantastic.
Carpet. He knew. That was Jim Larrañaga. He was a fun guy. Fun guy. And look, the legacy of George Mason, as you said, being because we saw other teams, other big majors rise up in the ensuing years, but they were the first one and they started the ball rolling.
But yeah, I mean, that's the hard part of the process is that when you start going into that room and here's the bubble teams, right? Because you've got your automatic bids. That's one thing. They weren't, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't argue against the, all right, they're the conference champion, let them in. But when you get an at-large bid, I mean, that's a responsibility.
They validated.
I mean, that's a big responsibility when you're the first to try to cut through.
So how about some, where are they now, Mike Harmon? Where are some of these players now?
We'll start with Tony Skin. He is an assistant coach at Louisiana Tech. We go to Lamar Butler. He runs something called Sports Heaven.
I run Sports Heaven. We run Sports Heaven every night.
Every night.
Oh, we
got to
sue him.
Yeah, well, we didn't trademark it.
What is Sports Heaven?
It is if you need sporting goods for schools and youth leagues or...
Oh, that's pretty cool.
You know, kind of an extension, you know, a competitor to say you're played against and things of that nature. So you can go down that road.
I dig it.
So you got that.
Sports Heaven gives me a completely different picture in my mind, but that's okay.
Well, we'll save that for another podcast.
Sports Heaven. The Knicks win a game. Sports Heaven. Sorry.
They've had a couple of two-game winning streaks in the last two or three seasons.
Yeah. Season, sure, okay. All right.
But they changed up the front office.
Okay.
Better days are ahead.
All right, yes. Thank you.
And Jai Lewis, wellness educator in the Baltimore City Public Schools. So student wholeness. So he's gone through with a bunch of things for both the, you know, physical fitness, but also from the psychological side. So helping students navigate in Baltimore, obviously one of the cities in our nation that gets spotlighted for some of the issues. Jai Lewis trying to help that along.
How do you feel? I feel good. My work here is done. I'm going home for the day.
Yeah, but you got to do it again tomorrow.
Oh, well, that's the whole thing with school.
And multiply it by hundreds.
So that's the 2006 George Mason Patriots. Coming up next, how about a Cinderella team? So surprising, many of their players weren't even ranked in databases coming out of high school.
Sweet.
That's coming up next right here. Special Teams Podcast with Jason Smith and Mike Harmon.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
So from the aughts to the teens, we move for our final team spotlighted on a week two of our special Cinderella's NCAA tournament podcast run here on Special Teams. As we look back at Dunk City, the 2012-2013 Florida Gulf Coast Eagles that captured all our attention. Andy Enfield was in his second year there. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, many of Florida Gulf Coast players weren't ranked in databases coming out of high school. This is the lowest seeded team to ever make the Sweet 16, and did it with players that weren't even ranked. It's like saying, hey, what do you think about this guy? I don't know anything about him. I don't know. Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Sign him. Why not?
Found him walking around, playing pickup basketball on campuses and just hanging out. I mean, like open tryouts. And there's a million ways, as we've chronicled in some of the other Special Teams podcasts that we've done. You know, you come upon talent in many different ways, and sometimes it just all coalesces and comes together so beautifully. And in this one, they captivated a nation as you got deeper in their tournament run.
Florida Gulf Coast was only the number two team in the Atlantic Sun Conference, but they upset Mercer in the championship game to earn the automatic bid. They go on to the tournament again, only in its second year of NCAA tournament eligibility. Okay, this is only the second time they're allowed to even go. They pull an upset win, and they make it to the tournament.
Thinking about my beloved Northwestern Wildcats.
I had
my moment in the sun.
You did.
It was fleeting.
They played a hard schedule over the course of the season to get ready for this. They played games against VCU. They played Miami. They played at Duke. They played St. John's. They played Iowa State. You know, this is a pretty decent out-of-conference schedule to get ready for the season. And it paid off because in their first round game, they upset 2-seed Georgetown 78-68.
Seems like we talk a lot about Georgetown getting upset.
Well, this has been Georgetown's run where they were a 1 or 2 seed and would lose in the first weekend.
Yeah.
Like, you go back and look at Georgetown, they're never making it on a special teams, by the way, because, you know, Syracuse guy, we're never doing Georgetown. And two, this
just
is...
decided that's it?
Oh, it's, I'm never doing Georgetown. Okay. And this is the middle of a run in which, like, every year it was, we're a top seed. And then they would lose. They'd be out of it by the first weekend. But the main thing about Florida Gulf Coast, look, they had the nickname Dunk City because they were fun. They ran up and down the floor. And this game against Georgetown was like when you turn on your television for the first time and you see what something looks like in 3D. I mean, they kept running and throwing up alley-oops instead of milking the clock. They played with energy. They didn't try to kill the clock at the end and say, okay, hey, we're a team pulling off a big upset. We're getting nervous down the stretch. No, they were just going crazy during this game. Enfield even said after the game, I got crazy dude. On this team. They had no consciences. This game looked like one of those Rucker Park games in New York City where guys are throwing full court behind the back passes. Guys are catching him at the rim and rocking one through and holding on after. I mean, look, Dunk City was a pretty good apropos nickname, and right away they captured all our imagination because of their style of play and pulling the upset.
Well, and you're playing with house money, right? That stage none of them expected to be on at any point. And so it all comes together and you're on the big stage and you play wide open basketball. I mean, because you go back into the regular season, it's not like they were putting up 100 points a night either. I mean, there was some, usually in the upper 70s, low 80s is where they got to most nights, but battle tested and ready for the step up in class in competition once you got to the tournament. So that's certainly there. You're seasoned. But the other is Enfield, I mean, has to have put into their heads, like, let's just go out and play basketball. Let's go do our thing. Don't let this stage break us. I mean, we see it across all sports, right? Guys get to a tournament or the NFL or NBA playoffs and suddenly the rim seems smaller or things seem too fast. Here, just go have some fun. And they laid it out.
So they go on now to meet San Diego State in the next game. All right, so it's a 15 seed. Well, it's all right. Florida Gulf Coast, they're fun. San Diego State, we don't really know a lot about them. Marshall Faulk is not playing in this game.
No, he's not. But it's Steve Fisher, so we know him.
And again, Florida Gulf Coast runs up and down the floor. They're dunking. They're having fun. They're playing very free. And they beat San Diego State 81-71, becoming the first 15 seed to win two games in a tournament. And they move on to the Sweet 16. And sometimes when you pull upsets in the NCAA tournament, you can be a one-game wonder or a one-weekend wonder. But Florida Gulf Coast, because of their style of play, It was like watching a UNLV type team from the 90s just come out of nowhere and just, you know, blow you off the court up and down because of what they can do athletically. And that's why Florida Gulf Coast became legendary after just the first weekend. Because look, you get 2, 3, 4 Cinderellas making it out of the first weekend now. And okay, it's fun because you see the excitement of the game. Then you kind of forget about them. And then you remember again when they play a game next week. Okay, who does so-and-so play? Oh, now they play Michigan. Oh, they're going to lose that game. But Florida Gulf Coast was... Everybody wanted to see so much more of them because of their style of play and the way it was, I can't get enough of Andy Enfielder. What job is he going to get after this year? And how good are these guys really? How would they play if they played in a bigger conference? I mean, that was the type of attention that Florida Gulf Coast was getting.
Well, and I think that's it. When we go through the tournament each and every year, you're hoping that you have a team that cuts through. You know, to make the NBA analogy, why everybody got so excited at the different look when the Warriors were on their ascent, right? It's just a different style. And then, like everything, it becomes copycat, and how do you best keep up with them if you can? And for this squad, as we watch them roll through, and let's face it, we all like dunks.
I mean, who doesn't like dunks?
That's why highlight shows exist.
Everybody
let's
likes
have the
dunks.
Top 10 dunks of the night, and you could do 10 dunks out of the Florida Gulf Coast Eagles squad. But that's just it. You know, you've got that first weekend. There's so much activity, and how do you condense it?
Oh,
if we could do a couple of dunks, that becomes the signature of the team. That works. It's simple, and NCAA fans eat it up, even if it later bust their bracket in a whole other way, because normally if we get one of these upsets early, what happens? We pay for it on the back end.
So Florida Gulf Coast gets all the publicity for the next few days, awaiting them in the Sweet 16, third seed Florida. And Florida, who against ending everybody's season apparently as we do this podcast.
Yeah.
Florida was just too poised. They were just... not able to be rattled by Florida Gulf Coast. And the main thing in the 62-50 victory by Florida, Florida had 10 turnovers. Florida Gulf Coast had 20. You're not going to win a game against a top-ranked team when you have a 2-1 turnover margin. And this was a 62-50 final. I think people were surprised the lack of points in this game, but not totally surprised Florida won, especially when you turn the ball over the way they did.
Yeah, no, a good job in terms of defense. I mean, you hold Florida 62 and 38% shooting, but not doing much on the other end when you start going into the comps in this game. But 20 turnovers, it's what we do in the NFL, right? Let me circle who wins the turnover battle. You're going to win, especially if it's a 2-1. I mean, this is just becomes an ugly game. And really all the hype, it died on the vine there, but people will always have their Dunk City t-shirts.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember seeing the Dunk City t-shirts everywhere, and the same logo like got turned into Lob City t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
A few years later, for the Clippers.
You guys just repurpose it. I hope there was a lawsuit if it wasn't the same guys.
No one's buying Florida Gulf Coast anymore. All right, I guess I will buy Clippers now.
Moving on to somebody else.
So after the season is over, where was Andy Enfield going to land? Well, he lands at USC. He has had pretty good success at USC, but I'm kind of surprised he hasn't done a little bit better. Because look, USC basketball is clearly not the number one program in the city of Los Angeles. It's UCLA. But still, you would think that he'd be able to achieve a little bit more. Look, he's had a couple of good seasons with USC. And, you know, this is not to say it's been a failure, but boy, you'd think coming in, being able to recruit all the new energy, that USC would have a couple better seasons than they've had.
Well, they've had a first round exit in the tournament, a second round exit in the tournament. Otherwise, you're looking at back to back, you know, looking at 16 wins, you know, 16 win season heading into 2019-2020, where things started to settle into a bigger way. But, you know, off the jump, trying to build a program, 11 win season, 12 win season. Seems to have hit a stride, and let's face it, at USC, and for those unawares, there's been scandal after scandal after scandal.
Yeah,
not just when you get into Fuller House and Lori Loughlin.
John Stamos'
hair. You
gotta
mention John Stamos. Sure. It's part of, it's a prerequisite for anything Jason Smith show with Mike Harmon related, but it seems to have found his place, but it's never going to be the number one source of anything at the school. That's the problem. You're also fighting. You know, football's always going to be 1A, and so you're going to be battling for scraps to some degree.
All right, let's play a little Where Are They Now? Where are some of the Dunk City Dunkers now, Mr. Harmon?
All right, let's go. Eddie Murray. Not to be confused.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, baseball played Hall
for
of
the
Fame.
Mets, played for the Orioles.
Also a place kicker hitter. For sure. The Detroit Lions.
For a long time. Yeah.
He's a medical sales rep at Biomet in Fort Myers, Florida. How about that? Eric McKnight. He's working in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina for Hyundai. Doing some sales and marketing. And then Sherwood Brown still going with the Maine Red Claws as you and I sit to talk about this.
Wow.
He's still in the D League. Or I guess that would be the G League now.
The G League.
But
it gets lower and lower every year as it goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it got sponsored. So someone had to save it. But he's with the Maine Red Claws.
Well, Red Claws is a pretty good nickname for
Maine. That's not bad.
It's about the Lobsters. You know, and Sherwood Brown was the A-Sun Player of the Year that year. They just didn't have a great year record-wise. Look, they finished Florida Gulf Coast 26-11, but still you had a guy, the A-Sun Player of the Year. And hey, when you're in Dunk City, you're Dunk City forever.
Aw.
So that's our look back now. We've had 2 weeks of the Cinderella podcast, taking a look back at some of the most memorable teams of the past few years in the NCAA tournament. You can hit us up on Twitter at HowAboutAFresca or at Swollen Dome. You have an idea for some teams you'd like to see featured on future episodes of Special Teams. Our show is heard every night on Fox Sports Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. on the East Coast, 7 to 11 on the West Coast. We'll talk to you next week. Before you go, rate and review the show, whether you're listening on iHeartRadio, iHeartRadio apps, Apple, whatever it is. Give us a rate, tell us you like it. We will love you forever and ever and ever. Special Teams is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.